This is a podcast from the BBC. To find out more, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3. Today on Jazz Library, I'm delighted to be joined by a person who's been on the programme many times, but not talking about his own music. Today we're going to put that right. It's guitarist John Etheridge. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Alan. Hello.
We're going to start by going way back to the beginnings of your career and to a band that had achieved a really interesting position in British music, because on the one hand it was perceived by Radio 1 listeners as being absolutely a rock band that belonged to them, and on the other hand by Radio 3 listeners as a very artful jazz group that had incursions into the rock world, namely Soft Machine.
Yes, I think probably the reasons for that, there were so many incarnations of Soft Machine, which were actually very confusing, I think, for the fans at the time, that things changed, not evolutionary, they were almost revolutionary. In other words, the Soft Machine that I was in, that you're going to hear in a minute, was a completely different beast from the Soft Machine of 69-70, which was more of a psychedelic, proggy band, prog rock, if you like. And I joined in 1975, and already there was a lot of talk in the press, which, of course, in those days, there was a lot of press about these sort of things, and people were very interested, you know, was this the real Soft Machine? How could this changes be validated, etc., which didn't bother me at all, because the band I joined, which was John Marshall, Roy Bemison, Carl Jenkins, Mike Ratledge, replacing the departing Alan Holdsworth, was a team of players that I particularly admired, rather than the Soft Machine, because I'd always been a jazz wannabe. Although I'd played in progressive rock bands and not jazz, I always wanted to be in the jazz world. It was my kind of thing, you know, the way to penury, but to artistic satisfaction. So John Marshall and these people were people I used to go and watch playing. So I was incredibly thrilled to be asked to join.
Well, the track we're going to hear, which is called Huffin' from the album Alive and Well, recorded in Paris, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
This shows you very much saying, well, yeah, I know what Holdsworth was doing, yeah, but I can also be me as well.
Yes. The reason why I chose this track is there are lots of probably compositionally better Soft Machine tracks I could have chosen. But I remember when I heard this, heard the playback, for the first time in my life, I thought, yes, I'm getting to somewhere. This is how I want to sound at this moment. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to sound like that now, but this is how I want to sound at this time.
Huffin' by the 1978 edition of Soft Machine. My guest, John Etheridge on guitar, with John Marshall drums, Carl Jenkins keyboards, Rick Sanders violin and Steve Cook bass in 1978, as I said, on the album Alive and Well on the Harvest label. It seemed to us at the time, because we'd been watching the progress of the next musician with whom you worked coming back into favour in the early 70s with Dizzy Dizzley, suddenly you joined Stefan Grappelli, and it seems a bit of a jump from what we've just heard.
Well, it was very, very odd. I mean, suddenly I got a phone call from Dizzy Dizzley. So Diz sort of was looking for somebody pretty quickly, and he turned up at my house without a guitar, and he said, oh, looking for somebody to, you know, come over to Hamburg and play with Stefan. So I gave him a guitar. We played half a chorus of Fleet Georgia Brown. He said, oh, that'll do. Come with Stefan, and we'll see how he likes you, you know, which was the way it was done in that group. So I went over there. I mean, there's plenty of stories about this, but we could be here all day. And eventually Stefan, after a sort of rather few false starts, decided he quite liked me. So then Diz said, well, we've got this three-month tour. And I said, well, I'm with the Soft Machine, actually, Diz. And this wasn't a game I was playing, but I thought, well, you know, I'm sort of committed to them, so I don't know if I can actually do a three-month tour. And this really got Diz going, you know. It was like, what are you talking about? Soft Machine, it's a pop group. I'm offering you a job with Stefan Grappelli. So eventually I went to them and I said, well, how many gigs has the Soft Machine got in the next 3 months? And they had about two. So I said, well, look, I'd really like to go on this tour, because, you know, I was very loyal to this band. This was my band. I'd like to go on this tour with Stefan Grappelli. So they said, fine. So off I went on this three-month tour with Stefan, which then turned into 4 or 5 years. And if you listen to this next track we're going to play, I'm not playing anyway a Django style. In fact, I haven't really adapted my style at all. I'm playing like a sort of jazz rocky style on acoustic guitar. And he loved it. Every time I played a fourth chord, he'd say, hello, what is that chord? I like it. I can't do it myself, but I like it, you see. So he didn't want you to play like Django. He didn't want the Django thing. He wasn't keen on replicating that. And this was the 1970s, before the retro thing had got going. So if you listen to this track, you can't say it sounds contemporary, but it doesn't sound particularly genre.
That's Blues for BT from the album Live at Carnegie Hall by Stefan Grappelli, originally out on the Dr. Jazz label and recorded on the 15th of April 1978. And, John, I just wanted to ask you what it felt like playing on that stage.
It was amazing, actually. That actual show, Bob Thiel had put it together to promote his wife, Teresa Brewer, who was making a comeback. So he got Stefan and the group in to open up. So we only played a short show, which actually is why I'm afraid to say, listeners, my solo on that tune used to go on a hell of a lot longer. It's slightly more concise. Oh, it's an incredible thrill. I can visualise it now. I mean, there you are, Carnegie Hall, and when everybody applauds at the end of your solo, you think, blimey, you know, here I am at Carnegie Hall being applauded. It's brilliant.
We're going to move on to rather later in your career with Stefan, I think quite close to the end of your association with him, and the band at another of those fairly famous venues for outdoor recordings at the beginning of the 80s, which is the Paul Masson Winery in California. Concord Jazz had an arrangement to record their annual festival there, so there are loads of Concord albums of different people appearing there. I know that when Martin Taylor appeared on this programme talking about Stefan, he chose a track from this album, At the Winery, which has the two of you, the Dutch bassist Jack Sewing and Stefan together. This has always seemed to me a very happy occasion.
Yes, it was. Well, we'd been on a long tour, obviously, so we were pretty oiled up, as it were. It was very cold, and also it was quite nerve-wracking, actually, because unlike the Carnegie Hall one, which we didn't know was being recorded, this was being recorded for an album. And, of course, in those days, there was no chance of redoing anything. So we were a little bit on edge. And Stefan came to me in the morning and said, "Hello, baby, you got an arrangement for Minor Swing." I don't know why he had this idea, but he said, "Make up something for the Minor Swing." So I just, actually, when you hear it, it's basically me and Martin sparring, and then there's 8 bars of a harmony line at the end. So we did that, and we did all our normal repertoire. And I'm very pleased with it when it came out. But, of course, at the time, like a lot of these live recordings, when you're on tour, the gig seems to you much more restrained than a normal gig, because you are minding your P's and Q's. Thank you.
album At the Winery on Concord Jazz, recorded in 1981. That's Minor Swing, the band Stefan Grappelli on violin with Martin Taylor guitar, Jack Serving bass, and my guest, John Etheridge, on the other guitar. And full details of all the music in today's edition of Jazz Library can be found on the Radio 3 website at the usual address. So, John, life after Stefan. You knocked about a bit. You played for a while in the States. You did things all over this country and a number of different things.
Yes, it all in the 80s I sort of played with everybody because they knew me. I didn't know anybody, you see. When I left Stefan, I didn't really know anybody at all. And yet these people knew me because I'd played with Stefan, and I was considered to have some sort of cachet from having done that. So I started working with all sorts of everybody, you know, from Michael Garrick and Dick Hestle Smith and Gordon Beck, a bit, all these people from whom I learned a hell of a lot about what you might call real jazz. And recording-wise, there wasn't much going on. I went over to America and played with Gil Goldstein and Brian Torf, and went to Australia and played with John Sermon a bit and played on my own in Australia. There was kind of lots of things going on, but not any particular direction. And then 1987, 88, Gertie Yankeeova from Jazz Point Records, who discovered Borelli Legren, she just suddenly appeared and said, I'd like you to make a record with Vic Juris, the American guitar player. And I went, fine, and Vic came over and we made this record. But one thing I do remember is sometime later I heard a live album of Borelli Legren and Vic Juris, which is absolutely incredible. It's one of the greatest acoustic guitar albums I've ever heard. And I said to Vic, I said, blimey, if I'd heard that, I'd never have dared play with you, you know, because it's really... was fantastic, and our record is really nice and tasteful, and this track we're going to hear is a composition of mine called Chips, and it's just myself and Vic.
From the album Bohemia on the Jazz Point label, that's Chips, written by my guest John Etheridge and played by him and Vic Juris on two acoustic guitars. And elsewhere on the album, Miroslav Fetus on bass and Marcello Pelliteri on drums. And that was recorded in Stuttgart in 1988. Well, John, we're going to have a sample now of you with many of the Brits that you said you'd been working with here during those years in the 80s. We're just going to nudge into the 1990s a bit for what I think was the first album to come out under your own name, called Ash.
Yes, I think around the time of that Vic Juris album, a group of players accumulated who became my band, as it were. I mean, it was a fairly fluid lineup, but it sort of coagulated around particularly Steve Franklin on keyboards, who was very important to my stuff at this time. And then Henry Thomas, who I always wanted to play with on bass guitar. And I think, actually, Henry is one of the greatest soloists I've ever heard. And I know that sounds a stupid thing to say, because it's bass guitar, but he had a way of building a solo. Another one who's like this is Mike Walker. I mean, they've just got a wonderful way of building a solo very slowly. Henry always had this. And then the drums was Mark Fletcher on this album, but sometimes it was Nick France. It was Nick France before, but Mark had sort of more or less settled into it. So this was my first proper solo album with me in charge, dictating the course, saying, don't play that, no, yes. I think this track, Venerable Bead, which is nice and concise, kind of encapsulates where I was in 1992.
That's The Venerable Bead, written by my guest John Etheridge from his album Ash, which came out in 1992 on the Jazzprint label. Now, not all these albums we're talking about today are readily available, but just about everything in the programme, John, can be downloaded.
Absolutely.
Sort of hunting around.
Yes. The Venerable Bead can be easily found for download.
Let's move back to acoustic territory and a band that you started a little bit after the 1992 ensemble that we've just heard. And this is your slightly moving in Stefan and Django territory band called Sweet Chorus, which I remember hearing very soon after it began in 1998. The core of that being you, Christian Garrick on violin, Dave Kelby on rhythm guitar, and I think a very small number of changes in the bass chair over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
The current version of the band, which we're going to hear in a minute, has Andy Crowdy on bass.
I mean, we've been together now for 12 years. But I'd just like to say how it got started. I went to Stefan's funeral and I was very moved and I was remembering the time I had with him, which was just so incredible. And I thought, well, I just want to do a personal tribute, put something together. And then, of course, I found that a kind of good focus. So I could say to people, I'm doing this tribute to Stefan. Are you interested? And they go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, of course, it was an opportunity to play with Chris. And it was the first time I'd gone back to this kind of music. And in the intervening period, of course, the whole Django culture had grown up to this massive thing. I was completely unaware. When I put my acoustic guitar down with Stefan Grappelli in 1981, whatever it was, I really hadn't taken any notice of this area of music for 17 years. And coming back to it, it completely changed. You feel the pressure to sort of conform. And I'm particularly pleased with our albums because they don't conform. They have the spirit, I hope, they have the spirit of the music, but they don't sound like hot club albums. And this arrangement at Small Hotel, where I changed all the chords in the beginning, I think is a good example of that.
Yes, I think possibly too, because you and Dave have a fairly light approach to the chordal side of the playing. This doesn't have what the French and Belgian gypsy bands call la pompe.
That's right. Well, of course, you see, I hate to say this in a way, because people have got upset about this, but Stefan Grappelli really didn't like that. He used to say, I don't like that style. So when I was with him, he really discouraged us from playing in that way. And of course, Diz, who was a Django addict, when he played his rhythm guitar, he was more like Freddie Green. I mean, Diz was a wonderful rhythm guitarist, but he didn't play La Pompe. He played Four in the Bar. So I've tried to keep that feeling in the band, and particularly on record, I think we get it.
Hotel from the album of that same name on the Dyad label by Sweet Chorus, the band led by John Etheridge with Christian Garrick violin, Dave Kelby rhythm guitar and Andy Crowdy bass. And that track was recorded in 2009. Well, again, at the end of the 90s, John, when this Sweet Chorus band was getting off the ground, you were engaged in another very different project. There'd been a number of jazz attempts to look at the music of Frank Zappa. I remember playing albums on impressions from various parts of the world that had been starting to explore the slightly jazzier end of the Zappa repertoire. And you turned up. I remember a tour that began, I think, at the Mac in Birmingham with a band called the Zappatistas. Very shortly after that, we worked together on a session with the band for Radio 3. And very shortly after that, you recorded the album which we're going to hear, which is called The Music of Frank Zappa Absolutely Live for the Voiceprint label. And this band, apart from the fact that in the publicity photos you all had rather ridiculous false moustaches, really did dig quite deeply into that repertoire.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story how it came about. I mean, unlike the Stefan Grappelli thing, which was a personal project, I was approached by Dave Groom of Nottingham Arts. He said, we're doing a concert in October at the Newark Festival, and we're getting the Britten Symphonia to do the Yellow Shark, and I want you to do a small group thing. I said, no, I can't possibly do that. I said, I don't know enough about Zappa. He said, of course you do, go on. So I phoned up Steve Lodder, and he said, yeah, let's do it. And then, this being January and the gig being in October, in classic jazz fashion, I just forgot about it. August, I thought, OK, let's get some music. So I phoned up Chapels, and they said, no, there isn't any. And I phoned up everybody, and they said, there is nothing published. I went, you're kidding me. They said, no, there's nothing published. So I had visions of turning up me with a wah-wah pedal doing some 12 bars, you know, in Zappa style. So I phoned up Steve. I said, my God, what's going to happen? We've got no music, you know. So he said, don't worry. And I don't know where he got stuff from. And he wrote some arrangements. Fantastic. And then I thought, oh, we're going to have to do hours of rehearsal. This stuff is so complicated. Well, the band, which was Paul Jaya Sr., Simon Bates, Annie Whitehead, Steve Lodder, myself, originally Dudley Phillips, but very soon Rob Statham, Mike Bradley and Tina Lyle. We had one rehearsal and everybody just played it straight off, you know, just sort of modern musicians. The track you're going to hear is Sofa Number 1, which was Annie Whitehead's arrangement, actually, of this one. And this was all recorded straight down from a gig at Leeds. One of the reasons why it's called Absolutely Live, as opposed to Absolutely Free, is because it is absolutely, once again, completely and utterly live. And this is it. And this is a version of Sofa Number 1.
Zappatistas, the music of Frank Zappa, absolutely live, with Sofa Number 1 just drifting as it did into the concert to the next track, and that's on the Voiceprint label, recorded in 1999 at the Wardrobe in Leeds. And although John gave the personnel earlier, it can be found on the Jazz Library website. You're listening to the Jazz Library podcast with me, Alan Shipton, my guest, John Etheridge, and the web address is bbc.co.uk/radio3/jazzlibrary. Well, John, a few years later, 2004... I made my way down to the launch of the next album we're going to hear, which is your solo album, I Didn't Know. This is at the Pizza Express in Dean Street. Now, I thought for a solo gig, there'd probably a spotlight and a stool on the stage and you and one guitar, like a John Williams concert, instead of which there was more stuff on the stage than there would be for an Art Ensemble of Chicago gig.
Well, there's a few things there, Alan. First of all, I think it's like everybody should be able to write a novel. Every guitarist should be able to make a solo album, you know, and sort of prove himself as a solo performer. So I'd had the ambition to do this for ages, and I did finally do this with this album, a track of which you're going to hear. But, of course, I then set myself up. It's the only time in my life I've set myself up for some terrifying launch. So, of course, I was quite stressed, so I sort of kept grabbing different guitars to take down with me. But the other thing was, in all the great days of solo gigs, people like Joe Pass, when I used to see Joe, I'd see one set and I'd think, right, okay, that's great, I've seen the set. And the next set, I'd think, well, it's kind of similar. So I was determined to get a variety of sounds going, and also reflecting the fact that I've just been one of those persons who's always kept in touch with all the areas of their musical life that they've gone through, and I thought this is a good way of bringing all those influences into play, if not necessarily in the one tune, but through the night, with hopefully having some continuity. There were all those factors going on, and then you were there and everybody was there. I just remember starting the first number and you're all sitting there with your pens writing stuff, and I'm thinking, my God. And it was my second solo gig. I think I'd done a warm-up gig somewhere. So I was quite petrified, and actually it went really quite well, and I was quite pleased. But I generally try to avoid this kind of stress. ¶¶
My Romance, from John Etheridge's solo album, I Didn't Know, which came out in 2004. And John, what label's that on?
That's on my own label, actually, which is called the Dyad label.
We're going to have another of those shifts of gear now that we've had several times during the programme, because in a way we've come full circle. We're coming back now almost to where we began, and a band called Soft Machine Legacy. Now, I remember you were just about to do a UK tour around the beginning of 2006, and then suddenly Elton Dean, who'd been a very fundamental part of the revival of Soft Machine, died, and there was a bit of rethinking that went on very quickly. But in fact, Theo Travis turned out to be the absolutely ideal replacement.
Yes, absolutely. This concept started around 04, and it was very interesting, actually, because Elton Dean, Hugh Hopper, John Marshall and myself had all played for quite a long time in various incarnations of Soft Machine, but we'd never played together. I'd played with Elton. I actually hadn't met Hugh till 04. Obviously, I played with John. But as the four of us, we'd never played together. So it really was down to a Bosnian-American called Leonardo Pavkovic, who was a fanatic for the band, and he put it together and made it happen. And he was like our band leader, actually. He put it together, put the tours together, got us the gigs everywhere. And then, as you say, unfortunately, Elton died in beginning of 06, and Theo stepped in, who, of course, nothing to do with Soft Machine, but a very suitable guy because he played with Gong and he's got a very broad take on music. And then we carried on, and this track you're going to hear is called In the Back Room, and it's from the album Steam, which we did in late 06 with Hugh. And in a way, it does come full circle, because it's that area of music that I wouldn't want to play, as it were, all the time, because I like doing all these variations of things. But I've really enjoyed doing the Soft Machine Legacy, partly because it's truly democratic, which I've never experienced before. I think because our leader is our manager and fan, Leonardo. And it's great to tour, you know, people of your own age. Of course, Theo's a bit younger, but... And now we've got Roy Babington. We don't do a lot, but it's very enjoyable when you do it. And it gives me a chance to play, as you'll hear, kind of almost in the way... hopefully I've moved on, actually. But it's sort of similar to how I played in the old days.
Soft Machine Legacy in 2007 with In the Back Room from the album Steam, and that's out on the Moon June label. And as John said, that particular version of the band with Theo Travis on saxophones, Hugh Hopper still with the band on bass at that stage, and John Marshall on drums. John, it's that moment in Jazz Library where I can't ask you what your choice would be of your own music to take to, as it were, that mythical island, but is there an area of your music that you feel most proud of over the years?
I stand by pretty well all the stuff we've played today. I have to, don't I? Really. But I think it's the kind of associations I've had over the years that in many ways have given me a lot of satisfaction. And of course, the one we're going to hear now, John Williams, we started actually a long time ago when John formed a band called The Magic Box. And it had Paul Clarvis, Chris Lawrence, Richard Harvey. And gradually, I killed them all off and we've become a duo. No, we ended up as a guitar duo, which of course is very viable. People like that kind of thing.
Let's just talk quickly before we finish the programme about the track that we're going to hear with you and John. This comes from the album Live in Dublin, Places in Between, on the Sony label. Mm-hmm. What's the track?
This track, which actually was taken from an earlier recording at the Preacher Express, is an African piece, very obviously, and it's meant to bring to mind the idea of rowing boats. And it's got a lovely kind of lilt to it. And this particularly appeals to me because, you know, it's a sort of feeling that actually you listen to it and you think, oh, it's all very easy to play, but to get this lilting feeling, and it really gets it. And John's part is set and my part just sort of developed And what I also like is the thing where you can't really tell who's playing what, and we just sort of weave together.
John, thanks very much for joining me on Jazz Library. We're going to leave you with my tape from the album Live in Dublin. From me, Alan Shipton, and my guest, John Etheridge, good night.
Thank you, Alan.
That was a Jazz Library podcast from BBC Radio 3. Other jazz programmes on Radio 3 are Jazz Record Requests, Jazz Lineup and Jazz on 3. To find out more, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.